At the outset, I want to congratulate the task force on an outstanding report. From the private sector perspective, I think this was far overdue in coming. Before I actually get down to the private sector perspective of cybersecurity, you know, I've not come with any prepared script. I just jotted down points here as I picked up in the thing. All that had to be spoken about cybersecurity, I think, has already been spoken. You know, it's the private sector view that I want to bring forth here. Before I start, I want to set the context of a private sector cybersecurity environment. Yesterday, I head information. I'm the CISO of Airtel, as we told. Yesterday, Airtel experienced 6,600 new viruses, never before seen. We have CERT here who will have much, you know, larger figures. I'm talking purely just from Airtel's perspective. 6,000 plus new viruses. I'm not even talking about variants that were already seen earlier. 16,000 attacks, which we grade as high intensity attacks. I'm not talking on medium and low, which are like over 6 million probes in our servers to find holes in them. 2.5 million spam thing. And, you know, yesterday, the number of bots, our sample size that we did for North Delhi area, our sample size for bot infection, we take 1,50,000 subscribed customers of Airtel. And we run that to find out how many of them are bot ridden. 95,000 of them were bot ridden. Right? Now the fact is, right, more than 70 to 80% of our computers are no longer under the control of the end users. There's an army sitting there. There's an enemy army sitting there right in the midst, you know, out there to be triggered to attack us. They are a weapon of mass disruption. While we talk of capability building, education and training, I think awareness of the end users, the laymen, the ones who are actually using computers for their social interactions, they need to be brought in the fold. Otherwise, we can never have cyber security. And for this, government and the private sector have to, like, together bring in huge amount of awareness, huge, in different languages. Because there are people, like, in rural areas who you know, you need to carry this message of awareness right down to the last village where a person is using the, you know, an access device into the cyberspace. Having said that, while the task force report is pretty comprehensive, my view of this is that it is more biased towards defense and security, whereas cyberspace, by definition, fosters economic growth and social values. A robust, vibrant society. But because of the threats there, there is a protection component. We are now focusing, whenever we talk of cybersecurity, we tend to focus on the security component, forgetting the growth and societal value of cyberspace. It's important that we need to have, as a country, clear objectives as to what do we want of our cybersecurity policy. Policy should emanate from growth, fostering economic growth and prosperity and societal, like, you know, vibrancy. Now, having said this, if you look at, you know, our organizational structure, there are two different ministries or two categories of ministries. There are ministries that foster growth, like DIT, etc. And there are ministries that protect, like the MHA. In my view, there is a power balance between different categories of ministries. Whichever is more powerful tends to, like, you know, focus the organizational thing there. Otherwise, as a synonym, if in a country the police there have got tracking, you know, cars that can move at the maximum speed of 30 kilometers per hour, suddenly tell that everybody have to be below 30 kilometers per hour because we can only chase at the speed of 30 kilometers an hour. Now, who is that who is saying that we can chase? It's a prediction thing. And that is why today we are still, like, you know, grappling with increasing our encryption, bit encryption, above 40 bits. The economy is not permitted to transact above 40-bit encryption. It's affecting growth. It's clear this thing. Because, and why 40-bit encryption? Because there has to be capability rise, which is not yet there in the law enforcement agencies, to be able to decrypt. I will come to that area as to how indigenous R&D is crucial for getting this thing. So there has to be a balance between growth and security. And I think for this, this structure should have one clear leadership which oversees this. And to that extent, the suggestion of the task force report as having the NSA straddle these two is I think it's the most optimal and an excellent solution. Now, the second area that you know we've always been talking about, and we heard a lot of people talk about, partnership. The report itself says cyberspace quality is seamlessness, partnership, and anonymity and untraceability. Partnership is crucial. Without partnership, you cannot have cybersecurity. But before I actually go into the public-private partnership, we have Dr. Gulshan Rai. He had spoken about partnership. I think CERT under him and the CERT team have truly trailblazed in propagating public-private partnership in India. Airtel, you know, operates in over 20 countries, right? And I'm deeply associated with the governments there and what they look in terms of PNP. I think, like, you know, what has been done here is a trailblazer. For example, Commonwealth Games has been alluded to quite often, right? In Commonwealth Games, Airtel had put up the communication infrastructure, right from the DTHs, phones, the entire infrastructure was Airtel's. And for us, it was a matter of great concern that, like, you know, we will need to stop attacks there because we knew it's going to get attacked. Because there are precedences in various Olympics that have happened and Commonwealth Games that have happened earlier. While we knew that this is going to get attacked, we were flying blind, not knowing from where the attacks are coming. And that is where CERT under Dr. Gulshan Rai gave us precise, credible information that these are the IPs where you should be focusing on. So we put our team scanning while we were doing a general scan across. We focused on those things which we got from there, and we blocked, as like he had said, over 8,000 like attacks which took place in those 18 odd days. Now, that's one example of public-private partnership. Now, the other way flow, when Stuxnet hit India, a lot of work was done by Airtel and other private sector companies in pushing information and signatures to CERT, where they could analyze that and, like, get to the source. Another example that he talked about, 500,000 modems, which were, like, you know, infected. I got this information from Dr. Gulshan Rai in the night at about 9:30, right, saying that this is what they have got. Right. By 2 in the morning, right, my teams and the Airtel teams, we had got down to the thing, we analyzed this thing, and we already started pushing out, like, you know, messages to the end users, though we had no control over those, they belonged to them. But we sent out messages through SMSs, etc., as to what action they need to take. Now, that's again, you know, a flow of information between the government and the private sector. As far as law enforcement is concerned, as of 31st March of this year, Airtel has received 1,440 letters of appreciation from law enforcement agencies, right? That itself shows how closely we work with the government in you know, of course, this involves not only cybercrime, but all kinds of crime. But we work very closely. Now, while this whole partnership is vibrant, it's thriving. Of course, there's one more thing that I need to, you know, put forth. That is, in 2009, Dr. Gulshan Rai and CERT had suggested on simulating attacks on critical infrastructure. And being a telco, we are a critical infrastructure. And as I said, the number of attacks that we're experiencing on a daily basis. We had, like, and this thing, this simulated attack was set up. It started in 2009. Now it's become a regular issue. But initially, there were about 10 odd organizations that took part in that. From the private sector, there was only Airtel. This thing. We volunteered for that thing to get ourselves subjected to the attack. And it was a great learning for us. It was an absolute learning. While we thought, like, you know, we are well prepared, right? We did, like, you know, learn on certain aspects which we, like, you know, said, like ethical hacking, which was alluded to. It was a kind of an ethical hacking. We put the stops, we put honeypots. That actually got us to put honeypots in place where we said, like, you know, while we were contemplating earlier, we should have honeypots in a network to be able to analyze the attacks as to how they go. But when this simulation took place, we actually rolled out honeypots. And then that these simulation is going on. Now the number of organizations who are volunteering for this particular you know, test is, like, you know, is exponentially growing. And in the private sector, it's becoming a USP. It's becoming a matter of pride to be one of the organizations who is being, like, you know, called in for the simulation. So in 2009, where nobody wanted to come in, to 2012, where the private sector volunteering, you know, and they're actually, like, you know, considering it a matter of prestige to be part of this. That's the growth in the interactions between government in a which a PPP model can get. Now, having said this, there are some issues in public-private partnership model as it exists today. One, PPP has to be built on the foundation of sheer transparency and trust. It doesn't exist at this point of time, right? The private sector is not trusted at all. It could be that there are some black sheep, right? But then that should not become the rise in the air for a brush which, like, you know, is brought across the entire private sector, because it like, you know, diminishes the value that can be gathered out of a PPP model. You know, including the IT Act, Section 43 Alpha left what you call reasonable security measures to the private sector. They said that, like, you know, they talked about NASSCOM and CII and other industry bodies actually deciding amongst themselves what is reasonable security. When an act itself could show, that shows the kind of PPP, you know, potential that exists. But it needs to be founded on trust, which is not there. There is a reason for this, and that reason is traditional. It's the tragedy of commons. Cyberspace is commons, and there is a tragedy when nobody owns the thing. People do not, like, you know, look at the ill effects of not keeping their area secure, because the risks that get generated is distributed among all others who use the thing. So therefore, this tragedy of commons is there. Tragedy of commons can only be, like, you know, can be done not by waiting for the market forces to do it. In any case, market forces can never drive information security. Regulation can. And therefore, as private sector, we welcome regulation, but not over-regulation. Right? But that kills the spirit of public-private partnership. There has to be mutual talk and agreement. Private sector is really never, like, you know, actually involved in the policy, and neither should they. But certain objectives should be mutually agreed so that we put our acts together at the back end Like say for example, a very crucial requirement of securing critical infrastructures is to see that the equipment that is used, the facilities and the equipment is secure. Right? So basically we're looking at supply chain like security. Now the one of the ways which the policy has looked at is by asking the private sector to get every equipment that gets connected, especially in the telecom, certified either common criteria or 3GPP. As an industry, we talked to the government. It said, this may not work from, you know, while it's okay as policy, it's great as a policy that you get things certified, you get them tested. Eventually from next March onwards, we will have our own test labs where these will get tested. Very, very good on paper. Is it implementable the way it is being projected? No, because we came out, you know, I'm giving you the thing why it is important to discuss on common thing. We talked about three kinds of attacks that take place in supply chain thing. One is called as category attacks, because at this point in time, the policy says that you certify one equipment, say one model, and then all the other models of that, right, are also certified. The thing is that whoever wants to get that thing, he will certify one model with a proper equipment. And the rest of the thing, he can always put Trojan, like, you know, equipment. The second is patch attacks. A test or security for that matter only is at a particular point of time. Right? If you get an equipment tested today and after 1 month, a patch is put in that equipment, it can get completely off, you know, insecure, because you're testing it with its, like, you know, hardware, software, etc. at this point of time. And as we all know, all ICT equipment has to have constant, you know, patching done. So are we really going to test every patch? It's not possible. Next is the distribution type. The vendor can send one equipment, which is absolutely fine, to the test lab, but then, like, you know, send out, like, you know, malformed or Trojan equipment to the place of implementation. There are no checks. So these three are just examples. So do we, like, you know, look at only the policy level or at the operational level? That's very, very important. I come to the next point of public-private partnership is incentivizing. I think it's very, very important to incentivize public sector, private sector to spend on information security, because it's a common good. You know, it could be in terms of sheer just recognition, right? Recognition, tax breaks, etc., which is also, like, you know, alluded to in your in the task report. If you look at the threats today, the four threats: cloud computing, values going into the cloud, which has been talked, mobile devices becoming a huge issue, social networks already talked, but one very important thing is the consumerization of IT. Like, you know, when people are moved, like there was a talk about us being from the analog area and then the younger lot being in the digital. Actually, younger lot here are digital immigrants. They moved from analog to digital thing. They're immigrants. Being immigrants, they've carried forward quite a lot of the security that exists in the analog world into the digital world. So they are still. But the new ones who are coming in, the younger lot, they are pure digital natives. They don't have any idea of what things were in the analog world. And that's why they do not bother about security inherently. It makes things that much more. They bring their tabs, tablets, mobile phones, etc., access, like, you know, important data. This is becoming a huge issue. Then, as it was also alluded to, Internet of Things. Like, you have the core internet, which is about a million odd, you know, servers, etc. Then you have the people internet around that, which is where we are today. You know, networks and people, there's about a billion of them. But there's one more internet that's coming around there. That's the Internet of Things, where, like, a trillion, like, you know, embedded devices will be communicating with it. So the policy needs to take into account that aspect also. And then finally, like, you know, the indigenous R&D that we're talking, we need to have cryptography, crypt analysis as a priority. We need to have, you know, research on botnets and rootkit detection, because all these malware are hidden by rootkits. We need to have traceability forensics so that attribution, etc., can be brought in, and therefore deterrence can be brought in into the thing. And then dynamic self-healing networks. And in the cyber command that has been alluded to, my view about the cyber command is that, and what is there in other countries also, cyber commands are great entities and organizations, but they are suited more for an offensive role than a defensive role. Offense, they can be offensive. To be defensive, they have to like have like the public and the private sector involved in it, for the sole reason that the battlefields are the data centers lying in the private sector, and the troops are the botnets that are already lying there, embedded in the public, in the private infrastructure. So a cyber command is, you know, I feel it's asymmetric. It's one way. Defense, you need to get the partnership in. The problem is, how do you get the public and the private sector enmeshed with military? It's that much more difficult. Thank you.